CJ Moneyway Show. And I'm with your host, CJ Moneyway. Let's get it.
What's up, my good people? Welcome to the CJ Moneyway Show. It's your boy, CJ Moneyway. Today, I have guest, disabled U.S. Navy veteran, author, and award-winning journalist and photographer. I got my man, Christoph Morrow, on the show with me today. How you doing, man?
Shakespeare. Hello, CJ. You're very kind to have me.
And I appreciate you coming on today, man. Appreciate you coming on. So, Chris, man, tell us a little bit about yourself, man, and a little bit about your background.
Well, I was like, we were discussing before the show, like where I'm from. I'm from Houston, Texas. I was raised around there. I had a pretty rough childhood. I went to the Navy after high school, right after high school. And then I developed Tourette's somewhere around that time. And Tourette's is really dictated a lot of my life and everyday life now, Shakespeare. I mean, to the point where I can't like hold sharp objects anymore because I'll stab myself. It's quite gruesome. Shakespeare. And I say Shakespeare a lot, so that's what that is. Mm-hmm. That's a tick. I became an award-winning journalist around the age of 27. I started working as a reporter at a newspaper, and I've been a 911 dispatcher. I published two books, and including a kid's book, so a third book, but it's a kid's book.
So, Chris, So, could you share with us about your debut book, Second Son, and about, you know, how it went viral on TikTok and led to so many copies that you sold, man? I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, actually, it was somewhat premeditated. So, I knew that if I wanted to start marketing on using social media, it had to be more personable. And I needed to talk about my condition. So Shakespeare, for the first 3 weeks, I only had TikTok for 3 weeks before I went viral the first time. So I've gone viral three times.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. In fact, the most recent one was earlier this week.
Wow. That's amazing, man. So I guess that'll lead me to my second question then. Mm-hmm. So how does it feel when you reach a million views and discover that people all around the globe, man, are interested in what you're talking about and what you're doing?
It's, of course, I think the most common answer you're going to receive is the truth, the cliche that it's surreal. And it's a little bit enlightening about the way that people begin to treat you differently. I mean, just it could be from like people that you like just are interacting with socially and people that you interact with professionally. They treat you very it's transformative in that sense. But it's also encouraging. It's mostly it's encouraging. So, you know, that all of this that you're doing may not be for nothing, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, man, because I can't imagine hitting a million views. Heck, I can't even hit 1,000. So hitting a million, man, I know that got to be a great feeling, man. So congrats to you, man, on hitting it 3 times. And so tell us, Chris, man, about some of the challenges that you faced growing up.
Well, the way that I've described who my personality is has always been in contention, I think, with who human beings are expected to be. Which is this whole person that's sort of unassuming, you know, and just trying to live their life as best they can. However, I'm a writer and therefore an artist, right? And so I have half of me trying to live life and experiencing the spectrum of human suffering, of joy, of success, failure, all of that. And then the other half of my soul, the other half of my mind is an observer, trying to be impartial and trying to understand everything in a way that so I can helpfully impart, you know, lessons about or philosophies that I've come to realize are true, or have some truth to them. And so I got bullied a lot as a kid. I got bullied a lot as a kid growing up, and I was delayed, I think, a lot in terms of being mature, but that's also a consequence of the fact that I was really violently abused. My dad was very, very violent. In fact, the way that I describe it to try to to relay like what kind of experience it was. It was my dad would hurt himself hurting me. He would hit me so hard he would actually, you know, he would injure himself, like his shoulder, you know, like he would throw his arm out, that sort of thing. He was an alcoholic, which I later became, and I had to, like, I've been sober for like 8 years now. And yeah, I actually did very poorly in school for most of my school years. Graduated, I think, in the bottom five. I think I was the fifth from the bottom in my class. And now I don't think that anyone would, which is funny because my high school girlfriend was a valedictorian of the next year.
Mm-hmm.
She was a year behind me. She was a junior when I was a senior, and she was valedictorian, which is really funny.
Yeah. Opposites attract, huh?
No, that's the thing. That's the thing. I was very much like her, but I didn't have the space to be who I was because of what was happening to me at home. Yeah, it was rough.
So tell us about some of your experiences, man, that you had in the U.S. Navy.
Oh, man. Well, it depends on where you want to start. So, like, if I started in boot camp, it's really boring there.
Mm-hmm.
Boot camp's a lot more boring than it is. Like, people think it's, like, there's a lot of yelling. I mean, there was. Actually, I don't think there is anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I learned is that they're not allowed to yell anymore. The kind of stuff that they were allowed to say when I was
back then,
the stuff that they said to the stuff that I heard, you know, RDCs, which is recruit division commanders, are kind of like drill sergeants, the Navy's equivalent of a drill sergeant. The stuff that they said to these recruits was the most diabolical, just awful, just demeaning stuff. But they can't do that anymore. And that's probably for the better, because the things they were saying were just really inappropriate, frankly. You know, it had nothing to do with bettering them.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
As a person, or bringing more honor, or imparting what, you know, how important valor is and duty. None of that. It was stuff that really you wouldn't be able to say in a regular workplace for certain. You would certainly lose your job. But whenever I got into working, I worked at a hospital. So I was a Navy corpsman. So I was a medic. I went to core school in Great Lakes, Illinois, which was right next to where I went to boot camp. And then I got myself stationed in Florida on purpose because I wanted to go to Florida.
Yeah.
Because it was warm and I was sick of the cold. It was negative 40 degrees on the Great Lakes, you know, in the wintertime. And that's the most miserable cold I've ever experienced in my life.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I developed Tourette's, and I had my first manifestation of it, and I couldn't be in the Navy anymore. And while I was on my way out, I lost a shipmate to suicide. There was a guy I worked with every day. He was a friend of mine. I mean, he was friends with everybody, like everyone in our department. But I worked with him, like, right next to him. Literally, our desks were just a couple feet away from one another. Yeah, he died one night, December 27th, I think. He died the day before I returned from Christmas leave, and it was messed up.
Yeah, I can imagine that was a sad situation. A lot of stuff to take on. Mm-hmm. So, that's shift to something else, man. So yeah. Share with us your experience about working on a film and on a film set and assisting in completing and helping the director's script, man. How was that feeling like?
It's great. I'll tell you, like, honestly, here's the thing. I didn't know who the guy was, the director. I didn't know who he was. And I had no idea that he was famous or anything, where he's from in India. Like, he's famous there. I did not know this until we were on the, he was accepting an award for an alumni award for his success as a director overseas. And I met him one night at a bar and he was telling me about how he had this, he was going to do this movie while he was here in America and he wanted to just shoot a film and he had the script already ready and stuff. And he had already hired actors and everything. And he told me what it was like. He told me the premise of the movie and the plot. And I was like, I think this could be better. So he's like, okay, well, I'm going to give you the script and then you can tell me what you like, change what you think you is necessary. And then I'll take a look at it. He ended up really liking a lot of the stuff that I had changed. Mm-hmm. So he brought me on as, you know, to be there the entire filming of the movie. And again, I didn't know he was famous until students from like Indian students were like running up to him and being like, oh my God, oh my God. And they knew who he was.
Uh-huh.
And I remember one night I was at home and I saw him doing a Facebook live event and he had like 300,000 something people watching him live. It was nuts. And I was like, are you kidding me? There's 300,000 people in India, which is over a billion people, I think, is a drop in the bucket. But still, 300,000 people watching his live stream, it just blew my mind. And I was like, oh my God. The way I'd been talking to this guy this whole time was not aligned with like who he is, you know, like in terms of his popularity. It's like he's, you know, he's been working anyway. So it was a whole thing. It was really interesting. Working on a film set was really enlightening about how movies are made, and it made me realize that I couldn't do the work I think of a director, because I can't visualize the same way that these guys can. They can, these directors and guys of DPs, directors of photography, can look at one, they can film a scene and then film another scene and then know how they're going to go together. I can't do that. And so for me, it was just all about the writing. It was like trying to create theater on set for a movie. Does that make sense? You know? Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So it was like writing a play. It was so bizarre writing I remember the first scene that they filmed that I wrote and having like, you know, a few dozen people coming together to like coordinate everything, to have the set, like to have the props and and to arrange everything and the lighting and the actors all memorizing the lines and stuff. And I'm like, I wrote this scene. And now they're going to film it? The hell is this? It was so weird. It was so weird because it was so cool, though, at the same time.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. You know, just being, you know what I'm saying? Like, just doing something of that magnitude and know that, you know, whatever, something that you're doing is making an impact. That, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That people, although you might not get all the credit because writing and stuff is behind the scenes, but you know it's something that you accomplished and something that, you know, somebody came, like you say, I didn't know who this guy was, you know, but he enjoyed what I was doing and he liked what I was doing and we went with it. And so, man, that was cool, man. So tell us about your book, man. Tell us about a little bit about your book. I know it went viral and everything, but just tell us a little bit about the book that you wrote.
So it's an epic fantasy, but I write literature, right? So I'm a huge fan of Shakespeare, actually, coincidentally, let's say that. And Charles Dickens, you know, Oscar Wilde, James Joyce, a bunch of incredible writers. And I don't read a lot of, you know, like stuff that a lot of other people tend to read, which is like James Patterson, that sort of thing. I don't read Tom Clancy or anything like that because it just doesn't speak to me. Mm-hmm. The book is about is three alternating storylines, and you learn with different characters throughout this world that I created. It's called Earth. It's just the world is called Earth, isn't it? I didn't change the name. Anyway, you learn how these characters in these different parts of the world with these different storylines, you learn how they're connected as you go on. And when I ask people, I've asked readers, like, how would you summarize it? They're like, I have no idea. It's everything. It's just everything. It's about, there's empire, there's slavery, there's income inequality. There's a concept of a paradise in the book that is meant to represent like, it's been meant to be an allegory for wealth and generational wealth inequality, which we have right now, where, you know, boomers had a much an economy that was much more accommodating to their when they were young, and that they could buy homes when they were 21 years old, 22 years old. And I'm 34 and I don't own a home still, mm-hmm. you know. Shakespeare, despite like all the stuff that I've done, I still couldn't not. It would have been without the VA, because I'm gonna be able to buy a home now, mm-hmm. Through the VA. But without them, I wouldn't be able to do that. And I don't know very many people that do own a home that are my age.
Wow. Yeah. Home ownership is something big right now, you know, and the VA do helps. You know, I think when we sold our condo, we was going to sell it to somebody that was getting a VA loan themselves, you know. So, so it is, you know, I agree with you. It is helpful and, you know, things of that nature. But so tell us, Chris, man, about some of the challenges, some of the health challenges that you have battled throughout the years.
I think the most destructive to my mental health, or to my health in general and mental health, is like OCD and anxiety and major depression. Those three things sort of made my brain very fragile, and I developed Tourette's as a consequence of that, and also even paranoid delusions. And it's been really quite a trial trying to overcome all of those. Just getting through the day can be really exhausting. I injure myself all the time because of Tourette's. So I hit my hands against things. I can't hold sharp objects because I can stab myself with them. Like cooking with a pan, you know, like if there's grease, imagine like you got grease in the pan and then your hand just hits the handle, you know, and you just throw hot grease everywhere, all over the kitchen. Yeah, it's really, it's terrifying. I mean, I sometimes throw my phone when I don't mean to. I've given myself black eyes. I busted my lip a few times. I hit myself in the nose, punch myself, and I gouge my own eyes. It's a consequence of the way that I was raised, partly. It's psychological, the fact that I was so viciously beaten, that I feel like when I experience anything remotely like shame, I hurt myself because I feel like part of me feels like I deserve it. And that's the way that my brain has reconciled those notions that, you know.
Yeah. So how long, you know what I'm saying, with Tourette's and everything, how long have you actually been dealing with that, man?
Well, like I said, it started when I was in the Navy, right? But it's when I was 19, so that was 15 years ago. But it didn't really like manifest in the way that it is now until I was about 25, and I started to experience regular symptoms, which is regular tics. And I would grunt, and my stomach would tighten, and I would do that like all day, every day. And that went on for a couple of years before it started to become far worse and far more injurious to myself, literally and figuratively, my mental health.
So, Chris, what are some of the strategies that you use to overcome your challenges, man?
Try to do work that you're proud of every day. That's going to be the most potent medicine against that, other than taking medications prescribed to you. Is to do something that makes you feel like your life is worthwhile, and that you have some control over it. Because a lot of people, that's what ultimately what all of it is, the root of it, of this, is like the loss of control, the anxiety, the depression, the OCD, all of that, a bunch of different mental illnesses is about the anxiety of losing control, of not having control over your life in some way. You know, when you have depression because you feel like you can't make your life better, you can't make your mood better, you know, it's a loss of control. It's a sense of that. Anxiety is the same. You can't stop things that are coming to destroy you. And OCD, I don't even have to elaborate on that, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife is a little OCD herself. So yeah, man. So before we finish up, man, is there anything else you would like to share with us, man? Or anything else that you would like to, you know, enlighten our audience with? Any other projects that you're working on that we look forward to, or anything of that nature?
Well, this is—I don't know if it's video too. Yeah. So this is my book that I just published. I have a—it's kind of funny. I put this picture of my cat as a joke on the back. Mm-hmm.
Put it a little bit more. Okay. Oh, I see. Yeah.
I thought it would be funny because in my book, I say a lot of really, I try to write something worthwhile. And one of the things that, like, for example, it's the juxtaposition that makes me laugh. So I'll say, like, when liberty wars, she commands, we forsake all our coming dawns and each its lamb of hope so others might enjoy our cherished reparations. Right. And then I have this on the back.
the cat. Yeah, that's pretty slick.
Yeah.
Like you say, always thinking of something ahead, you know. But hey, man, that's why you go viral.
Honestly, yeah. That's the most recent one had to do with, I went on I was at a cafe and I met a woman and I wanted to meet a woman. So I gave her a page out of my thesaurus that I had underlined words that I thought described her and I gave it to her. I put that video on the internet and I'm at 130,000 views for that. So.
Wow. Just on that simple, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really, people underestimate how interesting their lives are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's the little things. You have to, when you feel like you have some kind of insight into, oh, why do I do this thing that I do?
Yeah.
What is this thing that I have, I share with so many other people? They think it's exclusive to them, like these little peculiarities, these little things that make us strange, you know, but for example, one girl was talking about how she wanted to be her therapist's favorite patient. I think everybody has that in a sense, not everyone, but a lot of people do share in that. They want to be their therapist's favorite or their most interesting patient. Mm-hmm. Because they want the notion, and she, of course, that video got a bajillion views, and it's one little thing, right? So it's really about exploring those little moments where you have those insights.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So before we leave, Chris, man, tell us about your other two books, man, and your children's book that you say you're working on.
I actually wrote it. I wrote a kid's book. This is my first book.
Okay.
And it's quite hefty.
Yeah.
It's over 700 in the paperback version. And it's 220 something thousand words. To give you some idea of how much that is, The Hobbit, if you've read The Hobbit, it's 98,000.
What? It's a book that got 98,000 words?
Yeah, The Hobbit has 98,000 words. My book has 225.
Just about.
225,000, yeah. And then this is my kid's book. Which I wrote as a Christmas gift. It's a Christmas book, and it's quite cute.
I like the illustration. That's pretty cool.
It's about grief and motherhood and a bunch of other stuff. But and this is the one I just published. So
okay, so yeah. Is that like a volume two or something?
Yeah, this is the second. So this book is the first two volumes.
Okay,
and this is volume three.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah. It's the numbering is confusing. I'm gonna maybe have to fix that.
Oh, that's cool. So, tell us where we can purchase your books at, man, and your social media handles and things of that nature.
Well, if you go to christophmorrow.com, my everything is linked there, and it's on. My book is on Amazon and Kobo, and so you can get, you know, you can get everything from there. Yeah. Digital paperback and hardcover.
So I guess this will be my last question for you. Do you have anything that you can share with inspiring writers, people that might want to get into the self-publishing, thinking about writing a book? How would they go about that?
I think that the most important, if you want to write a book in general, you have to inspire yourself. And the way that you earn that inspiration is through exploring the world. Like you have to watch documentaries. You have to really watch people. You really have to think. Some part of you, however much that you is required, needs to be always sort of on and recording in a sense, and sort of trying to understand and derive something useful from watching people's behaviors and the way they interact with each other and their environment. It's really about knowing a lot of stuff so that you can go, oh, you know, I thought that this would be so, like, for example, there's a fish that gets a parasite on its tongue, and then the parasite becomes the fish's tongue. And it's almost a symbiotic relationship. Now the parasite gets to eat, because whatever the fish eats, it eats some of it and then it gives the rest to the fish. And that is strange, isn't it? It's something that would be interesting in a book. I mean, just, yeah. It's derived entirely from reality. So look to reality, look to nature, you know, look to communities, try to understand the dynamics between people. And that's what's going to help you write something. And don't be afraid not to know stuff. Write what you don't know too, right? Like, yeah. If you don't know about something, say, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. You get there.
Hey, I thank you for coming on the show, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate your insight, man. You sharing and opening up about your journey. Hey, go grab the book, first, second, and third volume, The Second Son, then grab his Christmas book. Hey, this your boy, CJ Moneyway. You've been listening to the CJ Moneyway Show. We out of here.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.